from WILL's Illinois Newsroom, this is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Tuesday, August 30th. Coming up, doctors aren't always able to provide evidence-based care to patients with sickle cell disease. Part of the problem is a lack of data on the illness. We'll learn more in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Many central Illinois communities are cleaning up after severe storms last night. Illinois Newsroom's Reginald Hardwick reports.
You're listening to a downpour in Urbana, where the National Weather Service in central Illinois says slightly above an inch and a half of rain fell last night. James Otten is a Weather Service meteorologist. He says Mattoon received more than 2 inches of rain in an hour, flooding roadways.
They had multiple vehicles in Mattoon get stranded in the deep water. Some of the water was up to 2 feet deep.
Wind was the issue in Danville, where gusts broke branches and tore down power poles. The good news, forecasters say the storms are gone and it will be less humid today. Reginald Hardwick, Illinois Newsroom.
Members of the University of Illinois Graduate Employees Organization say the university's proposed contract doesn't give them the pay and benefits they deserve. Union leaders say they went through 6 months of online negotiations with the university to improve working conditions. At last week's bargaining session, the university presented the GEO with a counteroffer to the union's most recent proposal. Union officer Assam Al-Khorigi says the university's response does not give graduate employees a standard living wage. The raise from the university amounted to less than $80 per month, which he says is the same as the raise offered to research assistants.
The increase in wage, it is literally laughable. It is the same percentage that the RAs have received.
He says the university also ignored the group's request for child care benefits, protection from overwork, and the quality of health care plan they had demanded. University spokesperson Robin Kaler did not respond to a request for comment on the union's response. The University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign is now strongly recommending students and staff wear masks in classrooms. As Illinois Newsroom's Emily Hayes reports, an epidemiologist at the university would rather masking be required.
Becky Smith is an associate professor of epidemiology at the U of I. During the first 2 years of the pandemic, she met weekly with university leadership to advise them on COVID-19. She always advocated for a mask requirement in classrooms because that's where students have to be. She says this recommendation still helps spread awareness.
Part of the problem is that people don't know that the CDC currently recommends masking in Champaign County. I know when I have told groups, they have all been surprised at this fact.
Smith says masking matters because scientists don't know yet whether vaccinated people can have long-term brain and heart impacts from COVID. She says immunocompromised people are also still vulnerable to severe illness from the virus. I'm Emily Hayes, Illinois Newsroom.
University of Illinois students say they're not rattled by Chancellor Robert Jones' recommendation to begin wearing masks again while in the classroom. Jones sent a mass mail Sunday night in response to an increase in COVID cases. Champaign County has been designated as a high transmission area by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dennis Kaglar is a senior in computer engineering at the U of I.
I think it's nice to know that the school is still like caring about it, because for a lot of people it just like went away.
Some students, like Kathy Lee, say they believe masking is not enough to reduce the spread of COVID-19.
It might be nice to reinforce testing just for, like, such high cases in the past couple weeks, especially since we're all coming back from, like, different places.
Jones says he strongly recommends students wear face coverings for the next several weeks until the community begins to see a decline in cases. Still to come, a closer look at the lack of data on sickle cell disease and the consequences for patients. That story from SideFX Public Media is next on 217 Today.
Current estimates put more than 500,000 people experiencing homelessness in America, with a large portion being children. These people live in every state and territory and reflect the diversity of this country, but risk is often tied to multiple factors. Right now, our digital social justice learning space is focused on homelessness in America, with educational resources available for all learning levels. Begin exploring at will.illinois.edu/social-justice-learning.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. Sickle cell disease is the most common genetic disorder in the U.S., and yet there's an extreme shortage of data about the illness. A federally funded program aims to help. SideFX Public Media's Christine Herman spoke with reporter Farah Yusri to learn more.
Hi, Farah. To start, can you tell me what life is like for patients living with sickle cell disease?
Yeah, so sickle cell is a complex blood disorder that causes blood cells to get jammed in veins, starving major organs of oxygen. And patients usually struggle to find the care they need. I spoke with Monica Brown, who used to live in California, where she was able to get great care, but then had to move to Texas a few years ago. And she tells me it was like night and day. She couldn't find a sickle cell specialist who could treat her very complex disease. At that point, her health hit rock bottom. So she'd go from one pain crisis into another.
I was just going in the ER every 3 weeks. That's how stressed I was. I was just like crying sometimes, just fighting with these doctors.
In the ER, she'd be treated by ER doctors, not specialists who are more equipped to treat her disease holistically. And so for many years, she wasn't getting any better. Part of the problem is that, yes, there is clearly a shortage of sickle cell providers. But how big is this shortage and which places have it worse is all very hard to quantify because we simply do not have the data.
So there's a national program that's trying to address this. How does it work?
It's called the Sickle Cell Data Collection Program, run by the CDC. And the goal is to aggregate data on sickle cell disease from across the country. So far, only 11 states are participating, and that includes several Midwest states like Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. California and Georgia have data available. The others are in progress. Indiana has shared some initial data, and it's pretty much in line with national estimates. It shows that the vast majority of sickle cell patients are Black, and nearly 70% are on Medicaid.
So why is it important to have this kind of data? What kinds of things might it be used for?
While this data might not cover every aspect of the disease, it's certainly a step in the right direction. I spoke with Dr. Julie Cantor. She's a sickle cell specialist in Alabama and the president of the National Alliance of Sickle Cell Centers. She says that in order to recommend the best care to sickle cell patients who might develop certain complications, doctors need to have data. For other genetic illnesses like hemophilia or cystic fibrosis, there are databases or registries, and providers can look to those for guidance or recommendations. There is no such thing currently for sickle cell.
A registry provides the data needed to make some of those recommendations. And so when you don't have that data, some of the recommendations that we make are anecdotal.
Anecdotal meaning they're not based on years of evidence. They're more like an educated guess based on the individual doctor's experience with their patients.
Did Dr. Cantor give you any specific examples of how this can affect patient care?
Yeah, one example would be, you know, there is a certain screening children can get to determine the risk of stroke. It's crucial because if they are at risk, they need treatments and monitoring. But studies estimate that less than half of kids with sickle cell get this screening done. Without it, they risk having debilitating strokes with irreparable damage, which could have been prevented if they got this simple screening done. Again, we don't have a database that tracks exactly how many kids are getting these screenings or where there are gaps. There may be some places like institutions and healthcare settings that are making sure their patients get screened. But if you're not fortunate enough to be in one of those places, you may miss out. And that's where a national registry can be really helpful. And these registries need data. And the more data points you have, the better. But as it stands now, we don't even have the basics, like the number of patients with the illness, the type of insurance they have. And that's what this program aims to address.
That's Side Effects Public Media's Farah Yousri speaking with Christine Herman. Side Effects is a regional reporting collaboration focused on public health. And finally, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says it will be mostly sunny and cooler today with a high of 81 degrees. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Sydney Wood. Reporting today contributed by Reginald Hardwick, Noor Longhi, Emily Hayes, Gabriella Traney, and Farah Yousri. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moline. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.